On RSN 927's Racing Pulse, welcome to The Verdict.
It's a tougher training environment now because there's now 15 trainers in Victoria that you'd be just as happy to give a horse to as the top two trainers.
But if you've got city class races and decent horses, why wouldn't you bet there? I'd rather bet there than on a biased track.
Yeah. Should jockeys be wearing masks now?
Is there a racing rule that overrides the society community rule? So I would imagine that they will have no choice but to ride in masks, you know?
What decision is made in the current climate? Do they take the cash or do they continue with their current partner who does an outstanding job and is also a partner in racing.com?
Why not just pour the resources into tracks that we know race well and don't have as many issues as others, make them as good as possible rather than trying to appease every country town that has a cup meeting because they want to have a cup meeting?
The world of the triple place parlay there's a few bumps in the road have appeared.
Welcome to the Monday edition of The Verdict with Matty Stewart and Mick Sharkey. Good morning, gents. The last Metro meeting of the season, and it was a punter's paradise. Everything that was predicted unfolded. Quaddy paid $70. The moral of the year won the last. Surely, Matty, you had a winning weekend.
I did have a winning weekend. I was just listening to the promo there about the another perilous weekend for the triple parlay, but it was actually a good parlay weekend. You're a boring parlay safety, odds on favourite. You would have cleaned up because all the obvious happened.
Well, we had a good win on the weekend, but it wasn't the parlays. The one I gave you on Saturday, I didn't even take, I should have. The mystery shot into a navel, into Lock and Varart, into Simon Told Helen. And never a moment's concern. Mystery shot was the biggest question.
And you could have gone the extra on maximum security as well.
Who fell in on the weekend as well. Mick Sharkey looks like he's a...
Hello, Michael. Hello,
very,
Matthew.
Very happy man. A winning weekend?
Yes. It did get off to a somewhat of a shaky start, though, on Friday when the whole world lumped onto Brent Stanley's coming around and it didn't quite come around in time. That was a marginal setback early
minor
days.
Setback, yes.
But we clawed our ways back from there. I went on one of those remarkable heaters when you're just buggering around with 10 or 20 bucks and then all of a sudden you think, jump back to about 6 winners in a row. This is going all right. And there's quite a little pot of cash in the account.
Well, I'm hoping...
Had to withdraw it very quickly.
I'm hoping all of the RSN listeners out there managed to end up being cashed up. Once again, Dean Lester, the Ramaruffi, who, while there are a lot of short price favourites...
You can't call them that anymore.
Well, it was 9.50 when he tipped it.
I know, but that's the problem. As soon as he tips it, the Ruffy status is gone.
You've got to get involved on a Friday. So it was once again, congratulations to Dino.
Yeah,
Warren Huntley had his best value of the day as well. High motion. Congratulations to Glenn Ingram, the Bull Eagle as well.
He left us out.
Who tried to blanket that tip? Said, "I'm not sure if she's good enough to win."
Won by 85 lengths.
Now, Matty, talk to us. Can you?
Is my mic working?
Ben Day, our producer, is Matt Stewart's mic working? It is not working.
Okay.
All right.
Some would say that's a good thing.
All right. For those of you,
I actually like your dulcet tones in the Monday mornings, Matty. Just my week's not the same without it.
What we're going
to
do?
I can't talk back.
What we're going to try and do? You know what we're going to do? We're going to take a break right now. I'm going to try and find you a new headset, and
compose
we will start
yourself
again on The Verdict.
The Verdict for OTI Racing.
Offering unique and inclusive racing experiences.
Find out more at oti.com.au.
Opinions. Everyone's got one. On RSN 927's The Verdict.
Welcome to The Verdict, take two. Matt Stewart and Mick Sharkey, join us. Matt, can we hear you?
It'll be much better this time, boys, now that I'm involved.
Well, okay, SMSs are flooding through, so that's the best start to The Verdict we've ever had without Matt Stewart on air.
Yes.
Mick Sharkey's here as well.
Yes.
Now, gents, we're talking about how much money everyone won. Good luck to all of those who did have a win over the weekend. We'll talk about the down point straight off the top, because that's what had a lot of people shocked. And that was the situation in Sydney, the first race, where... I will give you an update, which we got through late last night as far as Andrew Atkins is concerned, and the ride on Hugh Bowman, which is obviously subject to an ongoing stewards inquiry, and unfortunately, Hot and Hazy, the horse that had to be put down, and after we'd heard Danny Williams come out during the week and say, this is potentially the best horse I've ever had. It was just an absolute nightmare scenario. Matt, I'm interested to get your take. You wrote a piece yesterday on RSN's website about, obviously, Andrew Atkins. Everyone's thoughts are with Andrew. Everyone's thoughts are with the connections and the trainer of Hot and Hazy. I couldn't even begin to imagine if you've got a horse with so much potential. He wins a trial by 15 lengths early in the week. You come to the races and you don't even get to take that horse home. But you spoke about the reaction to Hugh Bowman's ride.
Well, and as much the what Bowman must also... I mean, I know he's the perpetrator, obviously, and Andrew Atkins and the connections of Hot and Hazy are the victims in this, if you're seeing it in black and white terms. But I was just imagining what must have been going through Hugh Bowman's mind as well. I mean, he's in a twinkling of an eye at 60 k's an hour. He's made a split-second decision that was the wrong one. It was just a dead-set wrong decision. He maybe thought there was nudging room on the outside of Hot and Hazy, but suddenly there wasn't. Whatever was going through his mind was going through his mind in a split second. And, look, I wasn't against necessarily the reaction, but it was just an indication of what a tightrope these guys ride day in, day out, every week in the tightest racing jurisdiction in the world. Like, the scene that we set for these jockeys is one where there's a disaster around the corner for all of them if they just look sideways for half a second, isn't it? Like, we race tighter than anywhere else in the world. We have track bias that shoves all these horses into one lane. I'm not necessarily saying that was the case in the first at Rose Hill. I remember Bowman on, and you know, they're always second guessing themselves against the expectation of the punters and the owners as well. Remember him on Rainier at Flemington where he didn't push out and he got hung for it by the punters. He said, why didn't you push out? You flashed home and ran second. So they're always got these, and I'm not defending Bowman's ride in any way. It looked terrible. The stewards will determine how terrible it was, and luckily Andrew Atkins is still alive. So, but all I'm saying, Shark, is no other job do you walk a tightrope like this every day where if we stuff up, Felgate will spit the dummy and you'll storm out and that'll be that. But other than a brain surgeon and a doctor, who goes to work every day with someone's life in their hands or their own life? So I was just pondering in the blur of the moment what Hugh Bowman must have been thinking as well. And obviously the hearts go out to those most affected, but I also was just wondering what Bowman must be going through and thinking that, even looking back on it, he must think, God, that was a blur, but I nearly killed someone. You know, that's just the reality of the job. I think that's what I was trying to get across in that story.
You wouldn't have been surprised if he hadn't ridden out the rest of the day, the impact that would have happened. He ended up, I think he rode a treble, or he certainly rode a great race on Mugatu as well, but I could just imagine what that feeling would have been like, because no jockey goes out there intentionally to cause any type of interference or a fall. It's a mistake that everyone makes. Sharky, what was your take on the situation?
Yeah, listening to Craig Williams on the drive-in talking about a fall that involved a careless incident that he was involved in that caused Damien Lane to fall, and still last night on a WhatsApp apologising for it. You know, that tells you what it does, leave a mark on these men and women when they do cause interference that results in a fall, because they know too well what a fall can mean if it goes the wrong way. Some jockeys tend to attract more of that public criticism, and I think Bowman's one of them. You mentioned the Rainier ride. He was, caned for that on social media in particular. We talk
he's
about
often
social
seen
media,
as not
and I know
trying hard enough to
he's the most
to push
high
out.
Profile jockey in Australia.
He is the most high profile jockey in Australia. Before that, it was Luke Nolan until Winx came along, wasn't it? And took that and look what happened to Luke in Royal Ascot when he looked like he made an error, nearly cost the horse its unbeaten record, and he wore that for years. I'm sure he still shudders when somebody brings it up now. But those high profile jockeys, the ones that transcend the sport, as we saw on Channel 9 News, they had it on. They had the incident.
News service runner.
But they ran Hugh Bowman, well, causing a fall at Rose Hill on a Saturday in July. Like, that's remarkable.
Well, that's how dramatic
that tells
the
you
event.
The reach.
Yeah, and the other thing about Hugh Bowman is I don't think of all the top jockeys, there's none that gets more criticised for sometimes just accepting the flow of the race. And not forcing the issue. Oh, gee, what was he doing there? He could have pushed out. And Bowman's always,
Is it his way a little bit?
It is, but
he's sort of half laconic.
So he he rides much more aggressively in the first at Rose Hill. And, you know, and the other thing too is that the consequence for jockeys is so much more severe than the intent and the action because of the life and death scenario. Every day of the week, they're pushing out and the horses aren't falling. I mean, I know it was a dramatic shift, but you often see it where there isn't a dramatic consequence. There was on this occasion. That's the, obviously the issue. So, the other thing too is, there was some suggestion that once we look at all the multiple angles, we might see some be enlightened a bit about Glenn Schofield's ride in the same race and whether it was a contributing factor and all sorts of things. So, and I think we're all waiting to hear from Hugh Bowman. We're waiting to hear him speak at the inquiry.
He did, and I'm going to try and find the steward's report because he did speak in the steward's report. He was interviewed post-race with the other jockeys, obviously not Andrew Atkins. And that is why there will be a delay, because they want to wait and speak to Andrew. But and I will try and find that. Maybe Ben, my producer, can find it and put up on the screen too. There was part of what he said was that he went for a ride, or what he thought was a run on his outside, and he knew he would have to push him, but he thought he was entitled to do that, which I thought was an interesting comment that was made post-race, saying that I knew I needed to push him out of the way, but I thought I was entitled to do that. Obviously, it wasn't as much as what he was anticipating, and then the horse in front of him shifted, which he then reacted to, and that caused the concertina effect. Now, late last night, Racing New South Wales put out a few tweets as far as an update on Andrew Atkins. Previously, his surgery had been delayed because of other emergencies. They had to put it back, but he was operated on yesterday, and Dr. Duckworth reported that he had scans of his chest that showed 7 rib fractures, a pneumothorax, which needs to be monitoring, something to do with his throat there, and he then had to have surgery because he had a rod inserted in his tibia because he broke his tibia and fibula. He also had a plate on his clavicle, his collarbone, and he also had to have a drain out of his chest due to the pneumothorax from his fractured rib. So I think that's something to do with a punctured lung and the fluid on those lungs there. So,
and he's had a lot of, this isn't, he's had a lot of falls in his career.
He has.
One of the other things that came out of it was just how people have an expectation about how other people should act. There was a lot of stuff on Twitter about Bowman had 3 chances, you know, where he rode the treble to come out and say something. Well, there was an ongoing inquiry. He's trying to focus on race day and not allow his mind to wander, to allow something else like this to happen, to stay focused on the game. What he owes it to Andrew Atkins and the connections of the horse. He doesn't automatically owe an explanation to the general public in the instant, in that moment. So just because people on social media have an expectation that Bowman should have done this, this and this, it doesn't mean that that's the way things play out.
No.
You know, so.
It was a nasty incident, and we wish Andrew all the best. And look, he's going to get a extremely severe penalty, you would imagine. Just going through and having a look at this now, Hugh Bowman explained the incident from his point of view. I endeavoured to make a run to the outside of Glenn Schofield on Mr. Colourful, which I had every right to do, but in doing so I was going to have to move Andrew slightly, but I felt I was able to do that. There was a shift by the horse in front of me and I was committed to the move that I made. I felt at the time I made the call to go to the outside of Glenn, I could do so without causing any interference to Andrew. So that was part of what Hugh Bowman had to say in the inquiry post the race meeting on Saturday.
And that's obviously how, in the split second, he saw his scenario at the time. That's why I get a bit annoyed on behalf of the jockeys at the pile-on, which is inevitable anyway, because it's such a unique circumstance. None of us can relate to that instant decision-making with life and death on the line, and it was obviously the wrong decision. But as it unfolded, there was no intent. It's the way it happened, you know. So they push out like that every day of the week in every race, you know. So just without the consequence.
Yeah, fingers crossed Andrew can get back as soon as possible. And once again, you can't even fathom the connections of Hot and Hazy and Daly and Williams, how they must be feeling with what was potentially the best horse he ever had, unfortunately not making it back to the track on Saturday.
I reckon other jockeys around the world don't have faced these daily dilemmas. I was watching the Maximum Security race. I've been watching a heap of US dirt racing on YouTube lately, which I'll recommend to everyone. It was last night, it was races. Citation. I've done Seattle Slough, so Secretariat, Manawar.
Would you be a form expert on the US dirt circuit now?
You know what?
Now?
I now love it.
Really?
I love it.
Yeah.
And then I was watching Enable and the wide open spaces of Ascot. The Americans just race wide and fast around those dirt circuits, and the Poms tend to spread out a lot more than we do. Like, there aren't any other jockeys in the world who face the traffic jams every day that our jockeys face because of the way we race, and that's another reason why I have a great sympathy for jockeys who get in that sort of strife, because no one can be in their head at the time, you know. So
since you mentioned it, you know, from the most horrible thing that we witnessed on the weekend to what I think was the best, Sheen Murphy's commentary of Enable at Ascot, that was, I think World Horse Racing ran with it. It was absolutely outstanding.
We've got that clip, but let's do it in chronological order. Let's first of all relive Enable's win. We'll hear from Frankie and then Ashine, because I want to talk about Ashine and what he does. This is the Mighty Mare Enable and what she did on the weekend.
Gets to work on Japan as well, and Enable is cantering, and Frankie Dettori looks round to his left, a long leering look, and Japan hangs in behind, and now Enable is sent about her business and strikes on, passing the furlong marker, and she goes three, four lengths clear. This magnificent mare, a mare in a million, a mare in 10 million, one of the great champions of the sport, and for Enable, it's King George the Third. History is made at Ascot. Beats off Sovereign in second.
I was trying to time it so I didn't get the front too early, and I couldn't hear it all, so I had to look around and I saw Ryan in trouble, and then it's a matter of hoping that if I press the button she pick up, and she did. And amazing, look, never been done with it before. Freaking Georges, I am over the moon, bitter knot on my throat I must say, but the fact that I've only got her for 2 more months, so I'm a bit emotional about it because she's special.
Yeah, I bet he's emotional. Frankie Dettori. He speaks with her about her with such love.
What about the race caller? That was a leering look. And that's what it was.
You've given a few of those in your time.
Oh, yeah.
Hasn't ended as well for Matty.
No, but they always misinterpret it.
But that just goes like a three-horse race, and the excitement that was portrayed through that call, I think it was one of the brilliant race calls that we've heard.
See, they can put on a three-horse race that's exciting because they run at a gallop. They still, yeah, they don't crib. And sort of, you know, and jockey and all that sort of stuff like we do. It didn't worry me when I knew it was going to be a three-horse race, because I knew that they would just put on a good gallop, and I knew that the Japan and Enable would both gallop their hardest to see which one was clearly better, and obviously the answer was there.
And Sovereign ran a mighty race as well, and as Ashine touches on in his call, it's only won two races. One was a maiden, one was an Irish Derby. So he's got a fair record. Now he's got a second in the King George. He was fantastic.
Well, for those who haven't heard Ashine Murphy, who is not a media commentator, who is a champion jockey with World Horse Racing, they get him to basically commentate the race. Not call it, but commentate it through a jockey's eyes. Now, this goes for 2.5 minutes. We've only brought you the last 40 or 50 seconds, but jump on social media, have a listen to the entirety, 2.5 minutes of speaking the way Ashine does. Not many people in the world can do it, and he captures the moment perfectly.
There's three to run. This is the exciting part of it. Japan is starting to come off the bit. Enable is hard on the bridle. She's straightened up now, and it's whenever Frankie presses go. She's absolutely cantering. She switched to her left lead, her outside lead there. Japan looks beat. Enable's in second gear. Sovereign's beaten as well. This is Enable's race to win. Frankie presses go. He goes clear. He gives her one little tap to draw away. There you've seen one of the best horses on planet Earth. She's an absolute champion. Outstanding. Sovereign runs home to finish second with Japan back in third. We need to treasure moments like that.
Didn't he sum it up beautifully? And I loved how he gave a little clap himself as she crossed the line. He is a genius, Ashine Murphy. And I put a tweet out on the weekend. I think he could almost be racing's most important global ambassador, what he does on social media and what he's able to do as a jockey as well.
I'm interested to see how many followers he's got now, you know, because of all this. Well, you could... I don't think I've ever enjoyed a racehorse more than Enable. Mm. And I honestly, and I, with all due respect to Winks and Kingston Town and Black Caviar, there's something about Enable for me. Like,
can you change your tune? You were off her on Saturday morning.
No, I just thought she faced a challenge. You know, she obviously faced a challenge and she came through it magnificent. You know that line that Peter Moody said about why he liked Black Caviar as a yearling, and he said it was like the girl in the bikini on the beach all the right bits move when you saw her at the Ealing sale. It was just the way she moved and the, well, he said it first.
I had never heard that, Matty.
No, I'm just quoting Moody. That's what he said. But when I see an Abel walk into the mounting yard in those tracks in England, there's just something mesmerising about it. She's the most beautiful horse that's ever lived an Abel. She really is.
And the Judmont colours have been carried by numerous champions. Yep. So there's that history with the colours as well, and the association with greatness and elite performance. And here's perhaps, well, Frankel's, I'm sure they'd argue, Prince Carla's best horse, but it's right in the conversation, isn't she?
Yeah, Enable. I made the kids stay up till 12:30. We all watched Enable, and they were just so drawn to her as a specimen too. Like, wow, look at her. She looks amazing. And I think the Dettori thing adds to the package, doesn't it? Like, there's no Enable without Dettori. So, and the way he, because he's been around the world a million times and ridden all the great horses, but the love he has for Enable, you know?
And that's, you're listening to his commentary after the race and his comments on the horse. It would take a bit, you would think, to break that composure from a champion like Frankie Dettori. And it tells you of all the thousands of horses he's ridden, the hundreds of Group 1s, that this horse reduces him to tears because he knows the clock's ticking on the time he can spend with her. And, and these moments, they're not long for his or for her career. She's only here for, what, another three runs?
Well, does she win her third arc?
Well, before then, though, it gets very exciting because there's the Yorkshire Oaks, the Judmont, and the... there's another race that she can compete in as well before the Oaks. So you've got Magical May clash with those. Gay Arthur's going to the
Magical
Judmont.
Magical won over...
Yep,
overnight.
She won the current cup.
The Gold Cup.
Gold Cup. So there is a possible clash between Love, who's the new superstar, who's the favourite for the Arc, and Magical and Enable in the Yorkshire Oaks. There's also a chance that they'll all clash with Gay Arth in the Judmont International, and that's all leading into the Arc. So the next 2 weeks, and this is factoring in Goodwood over this week where we've got Patash and Stradivarius going for record wins in their races, we're looking at this incredible possibility that all these great horses may all end up in the ones. The Judmont is the race where it can happen because that factors in Gay Arth, but the others may end up going to the Yorkshire Oaks.
If Love goes to the Arc, she's the looming on the hill, sword in hand, you know,
Zulu.
Castle just behind, just ready, you know, you've got to get past me, girl. Yep. If you want this, you've got to get past me. The young gun sitting there waiting. Yeah, that would be almost, it'd nearly be the rest of the decade.
Do we assume that Bold Geist is now retired? Is he retired after he's winning the
I'm not sure about that.
Sharky's international man of mystery. He'll find that out. Just on the internationals overnight, you mentioned Magical. Someone wanted to know your thoughts on that run overnight. And also, Buckhurst came through that race, finished last in that potential Cox Plate run. I'm not sure what the thoughts on that performance were from a Cox Plate point of view. And the other one was Barney Roy, won the Group 1 over in Germany overnight. Now, Charlie Appleby had been keen to get him out here for a Cox Plate, but the situation on whether he travels his horses, including Cross Counter, if he can't or his stable staff can't come out here. Previously, Godolphin have said that Vin Cox has said that it's unlikely that Charlie would want to sign over the papers to James Cummings for those horses for the Spring Carnival. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out because if Barney Roy comes, I think he's now almost favourite for the Cox Plate.
He's the $11 favourite
last
for the Cox
night.
But you would have think that the Godolphin, with its global sort of thing, do you reckon that the Sheikh would say, Charlie, you're one of my little minions. You don't tell us what we're doing. I'm telling you that Cross Counter and Barney Roy are coming out, and that James, who also wears a blue jacket, will be controlling them, and then you might end up with them later on. So I'll have a chat to Michael Brow because he'll have a little bit of an insight today about what the possibility might be there. So I was a bit surprised. I mean, to be honest, I'm not overly familiar with Barney Roy. So he's obviously...
Well, he's won three Group 1s now, so I'm not sure about the...
Well, Barney Roy was arguably one of their best milers if you go back a few years. And then I think he might have been retired to stud and then it didn't work out and he came back again. And last season he was okay third at Ascot before he won that German Group 1 on the weekend. It wasn't a standout sort of...
He's a floater. His name's been floating about for a couple of seasons.
He's a Ben Battle type.
Yeah.
And, you know...
He was competitive.
That might be all you need to be.
All right, a few SMSs are coming through before we take a break, and then we'll focus on the racing here in Australia. Stewards need to crack down on jockeys thinking they can push out all the time. It is dangerous and it is happening more and more and will continue unless severe penalties are given.
Well, if we stop racing on strips and lanes, then the jockeys will be spreading across the track and won't have to do it.
That's from Meredith of Blackburn South. Another SMS coming through here. Really? A three-horse field in a classic race? That from Glenn?
Oh, hey, Glenn, are you one of the people that potentially were cheerleading Winx? Like, there was quite a number of these people, oh, three-horse race, boh, ho, 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 ho. But apparently when Winx was beating up on horses, fields of five and six, you know, stayers that were going nowhere and never going to challenge, that was all okay.
Yeah.
As it's something outside of Australia, it's no good.
Three-horse race
Hope
wouldn't
you're not
work
of that
here,
opinion,
but it works there.
Glennie boy.
Well, Winx, the Caulfield Stakes, remember that? Winx, Blackheart, Bart,
and the other one.
Who was the other one?
Yeah.
Oh, we all stood and clapped then and said, what a champion.
It wasn't Manuel,
if
was it?
Yeah, but if it's all right for us, it's going to be all right the other way around.
Because she was the star act. You cheered Enable because she still had to gallop and gallop hard, and that's what she did.
These are generational horses. They're going to have a frighten off factor. You know, there will be horses that look for other targets. What, because they only win against three or four or five rivals, does that mean that it's less of an achievement because others didn't turn off? Come on.
Just on the international scene before you wind it up, so Batash Friday, I think, and Stradivarius Tuesday at Glorious Goodwood. Stradivarius takes on Santiago, who won at Royal Ascot, so there's a bit of a... He's going for his fourth win in that race, and Batash is going for his fourth win in the Qatar... whatever that race, the Qatar race on Friday. So, and Maximum Security, just on his win, he copped a bit of interference early and upset him a little bit, but then he sat second, then he nailed the winner. Both the trainer and the jockey said, yeah, we're pretty happy with that, he'll improve, but obviously... You know, for the all the fame that he's got to fall in a handicap race at Del Mar, and a lot of the service horses just haven't produced, so whether he's the same Maximum Security, but he still came out and won.
All right, very good. Just a couple more SMSs just to round out. The grandstand experts wanting to hang Bowman. RaceNet's got the right idea. It turns off all public comments while the inquiry is underway. The facts will come out. That's Rod from Strathmore. Boys, please be objective. The decision to come out was bad because the decision to come out was made bad because then Schofield rolled out on the leader. If it stays straight, the fall never happens. That's from Ted. Like to say Matt at 90 kilos will never know what it is like to ride a horse. Bowman will pay the price for a brain fade. Craig from Kilo. Craig, you were being very kind. 90 kilos.
That's what I was thinking.
Bowman is a great jockey, but if that is not foul riding, I know nothing. If I was an owner of the horse, I would sue him. That's Michael from Brisbane. So
foul riding suggests intent.
Yeah.
I don't think there's intent.
The social media demons need to lay off Bowman. Happens every time something to do with a jockey causes falls. I thought Hugh had been a very clean rider and he's made a mistake that could happen eight times during the day. It was just horrible that Andrew fell off. It's a terrible situation, but social media always convicts someone before the investigation has played out. So
it's true.
That's a snapshot of the SMSs coming through.
It's a really good way to handle social media too if you don't like the negativity or you don't like the hanging people, you know, before they've had a trial, etc. Just get off it. You don't have to be on social media. It's not the most enjoyable platform you've ever been on.
Do you want to tip Bowman to the edge of the cliff mentally?
Yeah.
Is that necessary?
He's obviously struggling enough on the social media at the moment and reading all of that. But look, everything is going to get played out. I agree with 100% of what you were said. I agree 100% with what most people are SMSing. He didn't intend it. It was a shocking accident.
Yeah.
He would feel worse than anyone, Hugh Bowman, what has happened. But that can't help the connections of the horse that sadly has passed away and Andrew, who's lying in a hospital bed, who we only wish the best and a speedy recovery.
There was a suggestion that what if the connections of Hot and Hazy seek legal recourse against Bowman, if Bowman is found guilty of improper riding, foul riding, reckless riding, and it'd be a shame in racing if that was the case because it doesn't factor in the instant volatility of these situations. For him to be burdened with something, or any jockey to be burdened with something like that over a catastrophic error that occurred in such circumstances, it's like too big a burden to place on them, don't you think? Like, even though a horse has died, it'd be an interesting test case, but you'd hope that Yeah, how hard does the life of a jockey have to be if you're going to be have that hanging over you?
You're listening to Monday's edition of The Verdict. We'll take a break. On the other side of this, we'll talk about racing locally. We'll also try and get an update on the Mitch Beer situation. Today is a very important day. I believe they're all meeting in New South Wales to decide what may or may not occur. And don't forget the Wizard from the West, Willie Pike. We'll also have a chat with him. Welcome back to The Verdict. It is a big Monday edition. Plenty of news to discuss. First of all, boys, Mystery Shot making it 5 from 5 at Caulfield on Saturday. And I thought the highlight of the meeting was some of the rides that we got to see. I loved the battle in that last race between Michael Rod and Damien Oliver. And I thought Ollie's ride on Viridine was outstanding.
Great
in the
ride. Fantastic ride. It looked like there was half a gap. Maybe not a gap. He just kept persisting. As soon as it opened up, bam, straight, just pumped it straight through Viridine. It was brilliant. And then, yeah, his beaten ride in the last was nearly as good. About, what, quarter of a length?
There's short. No more, he's such a ferocious competitor, yeah. Ollie. You'd be thinking, yeah, Mystery Shot, I'll do something here. I'm not going to cop this, you know. So, and the way he tried to upset the apple cart and force Rod to just keep pushing up when he didn't want to. I thought that was one of the best losing rides I've ever seen. And I thought Viridine. So, Ollie's just a freak, isn't he? Ollie's just the greatest competitor as a jockey, isn't he?
I was talking to one of the Mystery Shot owners after the race. He said, well, what was Ollie doing? I said, trying to win the race. He's trying to beat us. Yeah, that's what he does. He's not going to just give it to you.
How good could Mystery Shot be, Sharky? I noticed that Lindsay's decided to bypass the spring carnival. I think it's a
Can't
smart
go to
move.
The spring.
I think it's a smart move. Bring him back. There's plenty of money to be made in the off season, so to speak.
Absolutely, barbecue the horse if you try to go to the spring from here. He's promising. He's winning off season 3-year-old handicaps. That's the fact of the matter. That's what he's doing. He was pitched in that race on Saturday. He's been phenomenally well placed by Lindsay. The horse has got undoubted potential. But you can't sit here and say, oh, it's a Group 1 horse or anything like that. Like, he looks like he's got sort of listed Group 3 promise. Beyond that, who knows?
Well, Lindsay said something to me last week about how, oh, you never expect anything with this horse, but then he just keeps surprising you and surprising you. So if he's a natural improver, he goes on wet and dry now too, so...
That was the belief the whole time, was that he would be a lot better on top of the ground. He just has that sort of action. And even in New Zealand, when we were shopping him off the trials over there, the opinion was that he was a different horse on top of the ground than when he had his toeing.
That was a big win. I know he was thrown in at the handicaps, but the way Ollie harassed him, that horse had to keep picking up. I thought that was the win of a really good horse, because he could easily have just gone, oh, no, you know.
I'll turn it up.
Yeah. I agree.
Fifth run into a, you know, first prep, or second prep, sorry.
Didn't the market get it so right with the change of conditions, Jungle Edge, Viridine Mark II?
Yeah.
Yeah, poor old Jungle Edge, he just does not go on those firm tracks. And speaking of the track, it raced beautifully. Yeah. We get onto a good fourth. I mean, a lot of criticism about tracks and Caulfield and leader bias and so forth. Get onto a decent surface, the track raced perfectly.
Where was the rail? Was it out 5?
Yeah, I think it was.
Yep.
There was also a really strong late move for Streets of Avalon as well, like from about the point when the horse came into the mounting yard. So Shane Nichols got the horse looking really, really good. He's obviously in for a really good preparation. You would assume that kicking off here, possibly he's there to be fit and ready to peak in a Memsey and try and grab that Group 1 weight for age win while the others might be a little bit soft.
Lawrence to the Memsey is the plan.
And so effective,
Shane Nichols,
1400
very happy. It was 5 metres too, by the way.
You know what you can't strike out if you're black booking? You can't strike out Adelaide on Saturdays these
I was just
moment.
About to say, I thought the run of the weekend was Parlophone.
Yep, and Octane was terrific again. The week before, Stokesy's filly out of Celebrity Girl. It's a little nursery for Stokes and others to test run their rising stars. So you don't think that you have to look at Sydney. I think Adelaide for us is a really good, you know,
I know Parlophone was the sexier win and is a horse that, you know, probably throws forward now into a Quizette. And speaking of Michael Cant after the race, they think he's, or she, is a sharper sprinting type rather than 1,000. Immediately people say, 1,000 guineas, but their inkling is she might be a bit too brilliant for a mile, talking to Michael immediately after the race. Octane's an interesting one. Mm. Really, really good winning strike rate he's building. He was out of his comfort zone.
Totally.
on Saturday. They rode him a lot closer to the speed. Usually he's out the back and just ripping home. But he took a position on Saturday. He still quickened, still ran them down. He gets that head a bit
high. Yeah, he still looks like he races on generously, doesn't
he? Yeah, there's a little bit to come there with Octane. And he's so well bred. He's the half to the quarterback, isn't he?
Yep.
I think he is.
He was, as you say, though, he was in that hot zone. Like, he didn't get back as far as he normally would. But the way the field spread out, he couldn't have won if he'd gone.
Yeah.
So he had to sit in a spot where he could still be close enough. But he was over revving at the same time. Now, I reckon those three winners we've seen in Adelaide in the last 2 weeks, they'll blast through some of those early spring three-year-old races.
And what about the go on Parlophone? $15, and then it was $10 into, I think it touched as low as $3.80. And they knew, because well done to Jess Eaton, who got her biggest win
for
Mick Price, who basically told her to become a jockey. And you're in strife on the point of the turn. That horse on the inside just ran her off the track, but she didn't panic, balanced up, and it was a really good win.
And what about her big smile coming back to scale? And Kayla Crowther's big smile. I mean, it's pretty good stories coming out of South Australian racing at the moment for all the doom and gloom of a few months back.
Those little moments are great, particularly when, you know, we're all stuck at home at the moment and the kids are all around. And, you know, let's face it, my daughters aren't.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Depending on how I'm punting,
I'll block the blame. Now time to reveal the contents of Felgate's right pocket.
Yeah, there is some funny stuff in there, isn't it?
He's got a dummy in there. We can't work out whether it's for Georgie or for Michael when he has a throwdown.
It could be for both, depending how the Saturday unfolds.
It's funny what they pick up on, though, watching Jess Eaton after the race and watching that interview. And my middle daughter, Nell, came over. She's seven, and she came over, and she's, oh, Dad, asked me something, and stopped and went, is that a girl jockey? Yeah, yeah, she just won. Is that Michelle Payne from the, because they've seen the movie? I said, no, that's this girl's name, Jess, and she just won a big race. She looks really happy, and she hung around and actually watched it. So there's those little moments, those little touch points. It's all very important, particularly when we're all locked in our houses.
Felgate took his girls to Yay one day, but the sad thing was My Pearl ran last, and it was 45 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
You got to time it with the picnics, don't you?
The conversation on the way home wasn't, when do we get back to Yay, that's for sure. Hey, I'll tell you where we would love to be, and that is over in WA, Perth, where the wizard Willie Pike was at it again, breaking his Australian record. He had to wait a few days. It was a little bit like the nervous 90s, but he got there on Saturday and the wizard joins us. Congratulations, Willie.
Yeah, thanks very much. Good morning.
Well done again. You did have to wait a few days. Was it starting to play on your mind?
It wasn't too bad. I obviously had a trip planned to one of the country meetings and was supposed to ride a bag, and that didn't happen. So that was a bit annoying more than anything, but I was pretty okay with it all.
Do you like Belmont or Ascot? I mean, you ride them both beautifully. Have you got a preference for Belmont or Ascot, the two big tracks over there?
I think Belmont's our best track, but I sort of feel like because we don't alternate between the two, you're happy to see the other track at the end of each season. So at the end of Ascot, Belmont's my favourite. At the end of Belmont, Ascot's my favourite. So you kind of just get sick of one and you're happy for a change and happy for a new atmosphere. I don't reckon I really necessarily have a favourite, but I do think Belmont is our best track, with the just knowing the punishment and the wet days that it cops and how it just keeps on going.
It's nice to hear, Willie, that even Australian world record holding jockeys go to the bush for a swag of wins and don't get what they want. You can still have those days even when you're setting new records.
There's definitely one of those days. There's a big, you know, the perfect plan in my head, and then I went there and it just didn't pan out at all and nearly come back completely red-faced without a winner at all. So, definitely a reality check, it just didn't quite pan out that day, so just had to wait a couple more days.
Well, it was fitting that you brought up your 235th winner in the famous Silks of Bob Peters. And I did read a quote afterwards. He was asked about what makes you so good. And he goes, well, he doesn't do any form. what's your relationship like with Bob as well?
I think pretty good. We very much have a working relationship. We don't really... we haven't really had much to do with each other outside of racing. It's all sort of strictly racing is what holds us together, but in racing it's great. I couldn't say enough nice things about him, and that's not just because I ride all these good horses. I think we've got a very, very good professional working relationship. I've been involved with him for a very long time now, and we sort of know what we all expect from one another and how to go about it. So, and he's really good to me. He never puts pressure on me. He always leaves me alone to do my thing, I suppose.
Well, ask you about the gang of Bob Peters horses that have come over here, but just on what Bob said about you not doing any form, is that right? And B, do you think that that's part of your strength, is that you don't overcomplicate yourself with worrying about your rivals and speed maps and so on? You just ride the race as it unfolds. Does that work for you?
Yeah, definitely. Yes, that's pretty much how I go about it. I will obviously be very reminiscent if I didn't do any, but I browse through it and I have a look to who I think's won the beat and where they're going to be, but I don't really get too in-depth with it because it's either I'm no good at it or it doesn't mean a lot, because there's been that many times where I've kept away from a outsider and to be near a shorter price one, and just for the shorter price one to stop and not get me as far as the longer price one that would have got me a much better run. So I just try to go where the flow is in the race, basically. If there's a better run there, well, then I try not to worry about the fact that horse isn't as well fancied as the one on the outside, because I'm getting a better run anyway.
You get to ride them all, and it was great to see you over here in the autumn, Regal Power. Who is the best horse Bob's got at the moment, do you think?
Last time I said it's definitely Regal Power. I can't sort of... He's got the runs on the board, and he's got a railway over here, and then All-Star Mile over there, and probably should add an Australia Cup as well. I'll go with Regal Power. I suppose you got your Windstorms and a few others have gone over some pretty big wraps. If they can sort of handle the travel, which I don't see why they wouldn't handle travel, but travel and then take the next step as well, then I might be saying something different by the end of spring.
Well, Bob likes to keep you at home to look after his team over there. Are you going to be able to base yourself in Melbourne during the Spring Carnival and ride those four big guns?
Yeah, well, that's the plan. Obviously with the way the things are over there and things keep flaring up and the rules change every other day. So, that's the plan. But how it's going to happen and what it's going to look like is a bit unsure at this stage. But the plan has always been to try and come over and win one of those big races.
You're an immovable object as far as Perth and possible relocation and coming to the east and so on. Now that you've achieved, you've racked up all the numbers and broken your own record, just say the next 5 years, Pikey, are there any variations to the norm about what your plans might be, or are you just going to keep doing what you're doing?
No, nothing's changed, not one bit. I just keep doing what I'm doing. My life's pretty good, and I don't need to go chasing. I'm happy to come for hit and runs and things like that, but I'm pretty happy with the way things are. I'll be happy if they stay the way they are for the next 5 years.
And ultimately, that stability and consistency over the years, that probably enables you to go and have the success that you do.
Yeah, I guess so. I've got a very sort of good, work-life balance, and people probably look at it and think, oh, he's just staying comfortable and doesn't want to push himself, but I don't think I need to, so, and I'm happy, so that's all that matters to me, I guess.
What's the life balance look like? What do you do for recreation away from race riding?
I do a little bit of everything. I've got a bit of indoor cricket going at the moment. Not that I'm
really
good at it, but no, I try my hand at indoor cricket, and then it varies from there to I've got a farm and I run some cows as well. So I've got a few different things going on.
You'd be the Bill Laurie of indoor cricket, wouldn't you?
I'm the bloke who stands in the corner, hoping the ball doesn't come near him.
Willie, congratulations, mate. Another unbelievable achievement, breaking your own record for the most wins in the season, 235. And, mate, we hope things settle down and we do get to see you here in the Spring Carnival, because you've got a huge following over here, especially when you get everyone out of the last as well. So, a quick bowler, I'm being told. You've got a bit of speed.
Yeah, I'm actually... I think I'm a bit deceptive. I don't think I expect a little midget to walk up and then send down a little firebolt. So, yeah, I think I catch him off guard.
Oh, I like that. We might see if we can get a bit of a...
it's a vision here.
Yeah, get Pikey over here. I know you have played in that jockey's charity match once before, so we might get to see if we can see some of that and put it out on the social media. Well done again, Pikey.
Thanks very much, guys.
William Pike, he's a superstar, isn't he?
He's come out of his shell a bit too in the last couple of years. Yeah. He used to be just a zero-man, didn't he? But now he's a... Yeah, he gives you a bit. He gives you a bit.
Well, he's become a bit of a...
He's a cult hero.
There's been tours and everything.
He's
sort
bigger
of...
here than he is. Almost,
yeah.
Hey, Mitch Beer?
Yes, that's what I want to get onto. Today, I know you've been speaking to Mitch. It's an important... We were trying to get Richie Callender, who's the boss of the Trainers Association, but we can't get hold of him this morning. He may well be involved in these meetings, because I know there's a lot of meetings going on at the moment today with Racing New South Wales.
Donna Scott, Ronnie Stubbs, Mitch Beer, there's half a dozen or so trainers who are affected in a unique situation where, because of their location with horses on wrong side of the river and staff and so on, and we know the situation with Mitch, he's lost half his stable because they're on the wrong side of the river and he's losing horses left, right and centre. So the meeting today with Racing New South Wales, I don't think Peter Volandis is involved. I don't think Mark Van Gestel is involved, but though others are involved with the ATA, Mitch and these guys aren't even Zooming or Skyping. They're just going to hear the consequence of the meeting. I did ask them if they suggested that they should be part of the meeting, but Mitch said, oh, look, I've stated my case to them. I don't know. I don't need to do it again. Yeah. They know what the situation is. So it's almost a two-pronger. One is whether this ridiculous border ban should be stopped immediately, because it makes absolutely no sense, because it's not transferable via horses, and the protocols that they had suggested were utterly safe, removing bridles and so on and putting them on steam-cleaned transport and all this sort of stuff. But the other one is whether these trainers are entitled to case-by-case compensation for the unbelievable situation they found themselves in. So hopefully that's what Richie Callender is going to go to Racing New South Wales with today, is tell us why this should continue and tell us why these trainers shouldn't be compensated if you are going to continue it. So yeah. I think they're the two points that will come out of it.
No, they've done nothing wrong here. It's just a product of where they reside. Yep. And where their stables are and where their horses are. It's no fault of their own.
No, that's right. So
we'll follow that up on tomorrow's Racing Pulse. A couple of quick ones before we go. Sunlight. She goes through the ring today.
She does,
Magic Millions Broodmare sale. How much, Sharky?
You'd think she'd... interesting in this climate, you'd think the good horses are still selling well, though, and they had been throughout COVID. You'd think around the 2 million mark.
Yeah, 3?
Yesterday, maybe. They were hoping for 3, but that's... Anyone who's selling something wants to go the high end. So.
It's going to be a lot of money. You'd think it'd be north of 2.
She's just as glamorous a candidate as you could possibly
imagine. I can't remember what she was like.
Bigger mare that's been sold.
Type.
Can you, in Australia? Would she be the most sought
lovely,
after mare that's been through the ring?
Sold high.
Or the best performed?
I don't know.
You couldn't imagine a more... You know, like if you're a breeder, a big breeder, you want Sunlight. There's a big family there.
International breeders will want Sunlight.
Yeah.
You know, there's that Australian speed, and you've got, you know, the Zoostar sort of influence as well. It's an interesting outcross for breeders all over the world.
And Alligator Blood, the news came through towards the end of last week that he's lost the Magic Millions. Alan Andres, the owner, is keen to continue the fight, though, in the Supreme Court. How do you think this is going to end up?
What I don't get is the 20... I know the horse had to lose the race and they lost $1.16 million. If the court says, look, we're just applying the rule of racing, sorry guys, we know there's no reason why this colt would have Eltrenagus and all this sort of stuff, or gelding or whatever it is. 20,000 is a big fine
for David
Van Dyke. If the circumstances are, we're sorry, we have to take the race off you because it's an inadvertent positive, why 20 grand? It's a big penalty, don't you think, if they're just applying the rule that you must be disqualified if you test positive to something? Does it seem a big fine?
Well, to be honest, I haven't thought about the size of the fine, but he loses his trainers percentage. And I think I read briefly in the stewards report that they could find no evidence that David Van Dyke or his staff actually administered it. So I need to double check that. But it would seem to be a bit of a harsh penalty. I'll tell you what I did like, and it reiterated once again the class that David Van Dyke has, is that his reaction immediately after losing that, when he did the interview with Nathan Exelby and it was in the Courier Mail, was like, I'm just happy to get it behind us. We move forward. We may have lost the race, but it doesn't take away any of the memories that I have from that moment, still being one of the best moments as a trainer to have achieved.
He's lost the race, but he's still got the owner, so it's not all good.
I think he's keen to have the owner while the owner's got alligator blood. You'd rather keep the horse, wouldn't you?
So. We've got another one there that goes all right as well, young horse. That might be pretty handy, that combination.
Have they? No.
I'm not sure of the name.
All right, we'll follow that.
You'll find out very soon, I would assume. All
right. We had cameras here. Sharky's been mesmerised by George's Play-Doh for the last 45 minutes.
It's kinetic sand. Any parents out there will know how bloody addictive that kinetic sand is. Once you open a packet, you can't keep your hands off it.
Oh,
it is. Hey,
it's very tactile.
An SMS giving you a little bake here, Sharky, as we say goodbye. Shark, it's very touchy if his beloved OS Racing is criticised.
No, I'm not.
I get touchy when Sharky talks about my country cups.
You want to turn those country towns into ghost towns by shutting down their racetracks.
Yeah, that's right. Shut them all down. Just torch a lot.
Turn it up, Mick. That race in Europe is the biggest open class Group 1 flat race they have in the UK. Three runners was pitiful. Pitiful.
Great spectacle.
What do you think of Winx's or Winx's races that people wanted to criticise overseas? Is that okay or is it not okay? Or do you agree that they were running against, you know, stayers that weren't fit? That's all I'm saying is, if you're going to be critical of small fields on one side of the world, then you have to have the same view here when it applies to our great horses, when they're in similar contests. You can't just take one for the other.
Well, it was sort of like a match race, wasn't it? It was Japan versus a neighbour. We're talking up the idea of match races, and then all of a sudden people want to decry when one comes along.
Yeah.
That was from Leroy in Sunbury. We love all feedback, Leroy. Keep it coming, good or bad. Sharky and Matty love all feedback, as I do. And a lot of feedback on the Hugh Bowman situation, a lot of interaction today, so I appreciate everyone getting involved on the verdict. Matty Stewart, Mick Sharkey, enjoy your day. We'll read about it. What's on Matt Stewart's agenda for the rest of the day?
Just sort of trawling around, looking for some yarns, basically.
I'm glad you said yarns.
Looking for some yarns.
I'm glad you said yarns.
Put that mask on, Matty. Sharkey, for you?
Delete history, Shark.
I am continuing to trawl through broodmares.
Yes, in your new career.
Yeah.
Well done indeed. Happy birthday. Mick Robins turns 90 today. Of course, Rain Lover fame. And we're going to try and have a chat to Mick tomorrow.
Excellent.
I believe he is the oldest living Melbourne Cup winner. And what a legend he is. He's done so much for the Melbourne Cup as an ambassador over the years as well. Happy birthday, Mick. Enjoy the day with your family. We're going to take a break for the 10 o'clock news. Don't go anywhere, though. Winners galore coming up with the Packardham Preview and Warren Huntley.